Hey, this is Lawrence with a quick introduction. This episode was recorded in 2018, which makes it quite recent by our standards and by no one else's. Also in this episode, I commit an egregious fuck-up. I claim that Kempek is the Klingon Emperor, when he is, of course, just leader of the Klingon High Council. The Klingons have not had an emperor since the 21st century and will not have one again until the classic-ish TNG episode Rightful Heir, when the reincarnated or something Kayless assumes the role, although it is of course entirely ceremonial. I apologize unreservedly for this error and will strive to do better in the future. My name is Lawrence Allen.
I'm Ronald Shaw.
I'm Rahul Vora.
And this is Bad Time Radio. I picked two episodes of Star Trek about Worf, because I love Worf. So we're talking about Sins of the Fathers from TNG. It's the episode where Worf loses his honor for the first time, which he kind of yo-yos back and forth with the honor a bit.
And the main theme of this.
Yeah. And then we did Rules of Engagement, which is the Deep Space Nine episode where Worf gets put on trial. I picked these mostly because I really love the episode of Worf, and I think these are two of my favorite Worf episodes. I was also kind of trying to sell them on, I forget the name, but that episode where Worf and the lady Klingon he eventually will have a kid with.
Alex.
What?
Alex?
I don't think so.
The kid is Alexander.
Yeah. But where they like first meet and have to deal with some essentially unfrozen like cavemen Klingons, because that's the episode where Worf loses his virginity, and I thought it would be funny for me to explain to you guys why we know that's the episode where he loses his virginity. But now we went with these two.
I've seen the episode.
Yeah. The key thing is he sleeps with her and immediately tries to marry her, which means he's a wait until marriage kind of guy. He's never been married before, so.
Have no human women expressed interest in him?
He, at one point, Riker and he are talking, and Riker's like, why don't you sleep around with the Wit crew? And Worf just looks at Riker and goes, the women on this ship are too fragile for me to enjoy myself. And Riker gives him this insane look, and then goes, Worf, if that were anyone else, I'd think you were bragging.
So that's why you like Worf so much.
Well, no, I like...
That's a pretty fucked up thing to say.
But the reason I like Worf is I'm really attracted to characters who have, like, this strong, unbending, like, sense of morality, which Worf does. And I like him especially over other characters like this, because most of the stories you tell with those kind of characters are either they keep living by their moral code and things sort of work out for them. Those tend to be like pretty boring stories when you get down to it. Although I'll stick up for Solomon Kane. He's like that, and his stories are really fun. Then they also can stick to their code and get destroyed by it. That's what happens to Rorschach and Watchmen. And finally, it can be like they decide their code's not practical in the real world and they have to compromise, which is basically every show about a straight-laced cop and his wild partner, and they both, like, learn from each other. And these episodes – and Worf is never quite any of these, but he has, like, a little bit about all of them. In one of the episodes we watched today, he's quite willing to die for his honor.
Right.
But on the other hand, he's sort of canny about it, but he never abandons it completely, and he's always trying to live out his version of honor.
And you can kind of tell when he's, like, maybe done overstepped something, or maybe done something that's a little wrong.
Yeah. The other reason I really like these two episodes is that there's a fairly standard plot that will happen in Star Trek where the characters are presented with a seemingly impossible dilemma and then or a difficult moral choice, and then by just being like clever and using technobabble they manage to like escape from it without having to actually confront it. And that almost happens in both of these, but in the end it doesn't really it gets subverted, so it's kind of like undoing the standard Star Trek plot. Plus, there's trial episodes, which Star Trek for some reason loves, despite the fact that it's supposed to be about people going around having space adventures. Someone gets put on trial at least every season. Even in the animated show, Kirk got put on trial, and that one by Satan.
What was that old military show, JAG? You remind me of JAG for some reason.
Probably because it was about people in the military getting put on trial.
Yeah, I mean,
because that's the plot of JAG.
It's about
Space JAG.
Military lawyers.
Uh huh.
Yeah. No, I think that the reason that Star Trek has so many trials is because it's basically a show about moral quandaries in the future. And what better way to settle some kind of moral dilemma than in a trial with everyone's opinions expressed to make it as fair as possible. There's no one. What I really like about the kind of trials that they have is that no one's opinion is kind of oppressed or hidden away. Everyone gets their fair share in what is to be expressed in the whole thing, and they have to deal with what the actual facts are and what the actual story is. There's no miscommunications.
And this one in particular, we meet essentially the Klingon version of a sleazy prosecutor who will do anything to get a conviction. But at the end of the day, he turns out to be absolutely right in basically everything he says.
Yeah,
right.
Worf was like, I did feel something. I was...
Yeah, I was wrong. Yeah. I made a grievous mistake, and I'm only through luck did I escape this.
But yeah, it's like, and I really loved that character because he said he's willing to play by the rules, and really, he does everything that a lawyer should do. He's not doing. I mean, It's not even clear whether or not he even knows that he's doing anything wrong. He might actually feel completely justified in everything that he says about Worf.
And even in the like times when he's doing like weird, sort of sleazy character assassination. It ends up paying off with him actually establishing, no, this is sort of Worf's state of mind.
Yeah.
Anyways, so first let's go around. I guess, would you guys recommend this? I obviously would because I picked it, and I love the fuck out of Worf.
Yeah, I love Star Trek. I've seen the first episode. I have not seen this episode of Deep Space Nine because I haven't watched through Deep Space Nine yet, but I really liked it. It's kind of like what I love about Star Trek. So yeah, I definitely recommend.
Raul is sort of the interesting one here because this is like the first two episodes of TNG and Deep Space Nine he's ever seen. So it's very possible he won't like them, not just because, you know, he doesn't like the staging or whatever, but literally because, like, what's this Cardassian fuckery? I don't care about any of this.
I can't tell if I'm being unfair here, but there are aspects of it I would recommend. There are aspects I wouldn't. I don't like how... This is unfair. I know this is so unfair, but I feel like it's like... It looks like really low budget, even though it's just like old, right?
Mm-hmm. Especially Deep Space Nine because it's standard def. It's really pixelated on my high def TV.
Yeah, so I think I'm just spoiled. So for that reason, I wouldn't. But I think the content is good, you know.
So, anyways, with that out of the way, obviously I can't summarize because me having a 30-minute orgasm would like kill me, and it's not good content. So, Ronald, you want to take it?
Yeah, I will take over the summary for this one. So, first, we started off with an episode of The Next Generation, which was Sins of My Father.
Sins of the Father.
Sins of the Father. And it starts off with a Klingon being transported onto the Enterprise. And Riker is told that his position is being taken over by this Klingon as first officer. So, this Klingon comes on, and he's the first officer. And it's kind of a peace gesture made between... the Klingons and the Federation, just to try and get better relations between the two. And this Klingon immediately starts...
being a dick to everybody.
Yeah, he's a super
except
dick.
Worf.
Right. So he's really strict, just like you would expect a Klingon to be, except to Worf, he's really condescending and falsely polite, which is really clear just from the context of what's going on. So Worf eventually confronts him about this, and it turns out that this guy is Worf's younger brother.
Before that, though, there are some very funny scenes of this guy just being an absolute prick to everybody. There's also – this is a sequel to the episode where Riker gets transferred aboard a Klingon vessel. And he notes at one point that the hardest part of being transferred to a Klingon vessel was adjusting to the demands of his crew. Which is very funny to me because in that episode, the main thing the crew asks him for is two of the Klingon women proposition him for a three-way.
I mean, how good is that episode?
It's not that one is not as good as this one.
Really?
Yeah, that one, it's mostly they almost start a war because there's some weird rust on the Klingon ship, which sounds like I'm making up a cruel parody of a Star Trek plot, but is
let's be real. Klingons are always constantly almost starting a war because they just want to fight everything they see.
Yeah. Oh, and Worf's brother is also played by Tony Todd, who you may know as Candyman, or just... If there's a low-budget horror movie in the... Oh, he's also Death in Final Destination. Or I no, he explains death in Final Destination, okay. I think.
I was like, I didn't realize death was in that.
Well, I mean, he is, but it's not like, I don't think he's personified.
Like, force, yeah. Kern, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Kern is Worf's brother, and it turns out that Worf has had a brother his whole life, but they were separated during the death of their parents, and Kern went to go live with another Klingon family.
It was the Kern... Worf's parents were killed in a massacre at Kittimer,
right?
By Romulans. But Kern didn't go along with his family because he was judged to be too young and it was supposed to be a short trip.
Right. So, yes. So since they were supposed to be going here just for a short time, Kern stayed behind and didn't die. Whereas Worf went with... Also didn't die, but was adopted by a human family. So that bit of backstory out of the way. Kern reveals that their father, mutual father since they're brothers, is being charged with the fact that he sent information to the Romulans in the assault that actually ended up killing him.
And it's never quite clear why he would have sent information to the Romulans. They insinuate that he's attracted to Romulan women and their way of life, but on the other hand, he gets massacred. And when we later find out who actually set the codes, he also got massacred. So I'm very unclear on what the payoff is for any of them. Maybe they got betrayed by the Romulans, but it sort of seems like they were like maybe some kind of weird like honeypot situation. And then they're like, hey, give me the access codes. And I don't know.
Got catfished.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Romulan catfishing.
Oh, he's so good.
It's like, oh God damn it. She's not even Romulan. She's a Vulcan. And also this is illogical. So she shouldn't be doing it for two reasons.
Yeah. It's super not clear what happened there. I don't know why the guys ended up doing it, but I guess we're going to kind of get to that. So Worf decides to go to this trial, and he names his brother, what is it, Capuchin?
Kopek or something. I don't know. It's essentially sort of, it's not quite lawyer, it's not quite second, it's a weird amalgamation of the two. It appears to mostly be target for assassination attempts.
Right.
Oh, I thought it meant, like, fighter on your behalf in this, like,
I think it's like
trial.
A second, yeah.
But then it's not a trial by combat, though, so...
But it could be.
Yeah, and then when Picard takes over the role, he starts doing argument, but it's unclear if he's supposed to or not.
Right.
It seems to be one of those nebulous roles that always exists in Star Trek trial episodes so that they can bring in a third person who's not supposed to be there, really.
Right. So, yeah, so he goes, his brother goes in with him, Kern does, but Worf forbids him to reveal that he's actually part of the family name because if they're found guilty, Worf will be executed. And if Kern reveals that he's also part of the family, he'll be executed as well.
Because the Klingons are way into that whole, I will visit the punishment onto the seventh generation thing. They mentioned their family will be dishonored for seven generations, but then they're also going to kill all members of the family. So it's sort of unclear why the dishonor matters as much.
I mean, if you could do the I just don't understand why dishonoring is such a big deal. If you can just get undishonored.
I would think that they wouldn't kill the women.
Fair enough. Also, discommendation apparently is slightly different than losing your honor, because discommendation apparently means you don't exist.
It's like excommunication.
It's even worse than that, because they just straight up turn away from him and won't acknowledge him. It's like he never was.
It's just a silent treatment.
Well, worse, forever. Because Klingons are all about your standing in society, so just you are no longer part.
But he got
He gets it back later. Also, this is an interest... So, this episode will reveal it later, but... It becomes apparent as you watch more Deep Space Nine and also this episode that Klingon honor inside Klingon society is something of a polite fiction. The High Council in particular has no honor, and Worf later in a Deep Space Nine episode says that there's nothing more honorable than victory, which if that's true, that means you can do just about anything as long as it helps you win a fight. Right. So this is one of the interesting things to me about Worf's character. He wasn't raised by Klingons, but identified with them so deeply that he, like, read all he could and researched them and kind of ingested their propaganda about themselves without realizing that it wasn't true. So he ends up being like a more true believer in honor than any Klingon, which
he's basically following the guides of what the society should be rather than the norms of what's actually happening in society. So Kern and Worf go to this trial, and their accuser is Duras. So Duras is the accuser, and he's kind of a dick. He's immediately hostile towards them, and And Worf, it's not really clear that he knows that his father didn't do this. He just knows it's kind of illogical. Why would he
get himself killed
for information and then die?
And also, I think he's just doing this largely because Klingon society expects him to. So he goes striding in being like, my father did not do this. And there's no reason he should particularly believe it.
Yeah,
he didn't know his father.
Impression I got, too. I was like, why is he doing it? What does he care?
Yeah. So the charges are brought up against him, and he's willing to accept the price of whatever it is. And after the council kind of recesses, the head of the Klingon Council, Kumpek, I think was his name, goes up to Worf and says, look, just leave now. The challenge will be forgotten, and you won't have to worry about getting executed. We won't follow this up with anything.
And Worf goes, what the fuck?
And there'll be no dishonor. And yeah, Worf goes, what the hell? This is against all the Klingon honor stands for. So it doesn't really make any sense. Plus, he's the head of the council. So why is he saying this?
Yeah, he's actually the emperor of the Klingon Empire. So he really should have the most honor. Hilariously, he is an overweight gentleman, and they went into the trouble of making his head ridges also kind of overweight and bulbous.
Fat Klingon.
Wait, yeah. I thought he was just the councilman, not the emperor.
No, that's the emperor, dude.
That was Emperor Kempek.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Pretty a lot cooler.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything's cooler with an emperor.
So, but he's kind of like in an uneasy rule, as we'll find out a little bit later. But right after that scene, you see Kern get approached by Duras. And Duras reveals that he knows that Kern is actually Worf's brother. It's a very complex episode. There's a lot of moving pieces.
It also
here.
Has this weird structure where it seems to be like five act, and it changes radically the kind of episode you think it's going to be at least once, and maybe even twice. Because I mean, when I first watched it during the initial trial sequence, I thought it was gonna be more of like an actual like trial by combat type thing, and Worf was maybe gonna have to fight a monster
or Kernwood.
Yeah, which would have also been pretty cool, although I think this is better than that, maybe.
I agree, yeah. I actually really like this episode. And I really like Kern. I really like him as a character. It's cool that he keeps coming back, and he's Worf's badass brother.
Although the end he reaches in Deep Space Nine is pretty ignominious. I'm pretty sure they just erase his memory.
Yeah, that's pretty lame.
So he'll forget that he's the son of Moog because it bugs him so much that he doesn't have honor.
He can't stand it anymore.
Well, so Duras approaches Kern and, you know, reveals that he knows what he knows and says, if you leave, if you make Worf stand alone, I won't force you to undergo any of the problems that he's going
to
get.
So you won't have
get
to
executed.
Die.
Yeah. And Kern says, and he's made this very clear, and he sticks with his character by saying he'd rather die than be dishonorable.
Oh, is this at the... No, Worf in the initial trial says, like, today, Duras is like, you're going to die. And Worf is like, today is a good day to die, but the day is not over yet.
Yeah, which is really bad.
That's like an all-time great Worf line. Yeah. It's like that and then him bragging about how if he tries to have sex with a human, she'll break.
Yeah. So, and then after that, and so during this scene, Kern says, like Worf said, the day is not over. But then
he gets shanked.
Two assassins come out of the tunnel, and he puts up a decent fight, but he gets shanked.
I think if there'd just been one, he might have had a chance. But
yeah,
two,
it seemed like he fought off the first guy fine, and then the second guy got him from behind. It's just, you know, two clean
title of
warriors.
Never mind. Title of your sex tape. Nah, nice. That didn't work.
All right, so Kern is kind of taken out, but he's not dead. He's just hurt, but he can't participate in the trial.
And he's sent back to the Enterprise.
Beverly Crusher, the doctor in the Enterprise, makes it clear that he's going to live. So.
But then Worf's like, you should have let him die. He's going to die anyway.
Yeah, I was like, what the shit?
Yeah, he's going to die anyways, because all evidence is pointing to the fact that Worf's dad actually did send the transmission. And so that's kind of the background in this episode, is Data and LaForge are looking into the message transcripts from Kittimer, and it looks like Worf's dad actually did send, like, from the evidence they had. There's some missing data, but everything that they see, it looks like Moog, Worf's dad, did send a transmission to Cardassians.
Although, well, it's Romulans, but also, they uncover enough evidence to suggest tampering, but not enough to say, hey, he didn't do it.
Right. Yeah, so after a little while, they see, like, oh, there's some missing data here, so it's possible this was tampered with. But they don't really know too much. So cut back to the trial. where Worf is like, hey, somebody attacked my caption, or what is it?
I don't know.
Yeah.
What was it's
it? Something.
It's a made-up word.
Capuchin.
Capuchin. I think it was like
capuchin. It's capuchin. You gotta wear a little monkey outfit yeah. while you're doing it.
I'm Googling it.
Yeah, look it up real quick. So
look it up real quick and then get all the targeted ads for nerd shit you can imagine.
Yeah, right? So he doesn't have his assistant anymore, so that makes him look really bad, so he has to name a new one. And he asks Picard if he can name somebody from the Enterprise, and Picard says, of course. And then, weirdly enough, he asks Picard to be his second instead of Riker, which I'm very confused about still. Except, I guess, like, Picard's better in a trial situation.
Yeah, it's not a fucking contest. Riker's going to be largely useless.
Well, Riker's better at fighting, for sure.
Apparently not, based on this episode. Worf, Picard fights off two goddamn Klingon assassins.
That's true, but there's no reason to believe that Riker wouldn't have.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Hey, I think he really should have picked Data.
Well, if you're in a fight, yes.
Yeah.
Data is definitely the strongest. But Data and Worf don't really have any kind of close... Whereas, like, Riker understands Klingon culture a lot better than basically anyone on this ship.
That's... I'm trying... Yeah, the only Data Worf episode I can think of is that stupid one set in the Old West.
Yeah, I mean, they interact, but...
That's the only one where they interact at any length, and then it's an evil copy of Data.
Oh, yeah.
That's such a dumb episode.
Yeah, there's a lot of Holosim episodes that are just kind
there's
of forgettable.
There's, like, one good holodeck episode. The second one with Moriarty.
Yeah. Even the first one with Moriarty's not bad.
Yeah, but if there's not Moriarty and it's a holodeck episode... Oh, I take that back. I also really like the one with... Who's that horrible nerd character?
LaForge?
No. He's even worse than LaForge. And they go into the holosuite and he's made, like, sex
yes.
copies of all of them.
What is his name? Oh, I love that guy. He's the worst.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah. Super
Chadik. Or
Chadich.
Chadich.
So nowhere near Capuchin. Well, because
okay,
we're all monkeys.
Okay, so the Chadich. So Worf asks Picard to be his Chadich. Which actually ends up working out pretty well, because Picard's, like, you know, pretty good at everything. So he's a good fighter. He's really good at speaking.
Although everyone in this episode is pretty good at speaking, weirdly. This episode plays a lot like what if you were doing Shakespeare, but everyone had stupid shit on their foreheads.
You know, a lot of Star Trek is acted like Shakespeare, like, for sure.
I think it's because, like, if you want, like, professional actors who can, like, carry a scene but don't cost that much, you normally go to theatrical actors, and that means you get a lot of Shakespearean guys.
Yeah, and I mean, that was kind of a...
Patrick Stewart's bit, 100%.
Yeah, so anyways, Picard becomes his new Chadich. And, Beverly Crusher, I'm a little unclear why she figured this out, but she figures out that there was some other survivor at Kittimer.
I think she's analyzing the medical scans, because in Star Trek it's kind of ambiguous what scanner can do what.
Okay. So, yeah, anyways, Dr. Crusher figures out that there was another survivor at Kittimer, and she's alive still, and she's on the Klingon world where they're at.
And apparently, I think they have to do a search of Klingon records for this, which is very... It's strange that she's in there at all, unless...
They scan the Klingon net.
Yeah.
Which was so convenient.
Yeah.
And Raoul suggested that, obviously, Google.kl.
Yeah. Google.kl. You know,
did they have Google when Star Trek was...
This is like the early 90s, somehow.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Did they thought of the internet at all?
I don't know, just a scan the net, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess that's what Google is, but... Anyway.
I mean, to be fair, Neuromancer being published, someone had thought of the internet. And also, I'm aware that Neuromancer, like, the internet predates it by, like, 10 years.
Yeah, the internet was around, it just wasn't public yet. Or it was, maybe...
It was like those BBC boards or whatever. BBS. BBC is something else. It's a couple of things. Stop laughing. I could have been talking about the Broadcast Corporation. You don't know.
Well, that's what I was laughing at. So anyways, they scanned the net and they figured out that there's this woman who survived from Kittimer, and she's on the Klingon homeworld. So the guard's like, hey, Worf, I'm going to go get this woman.
Oh, he gets the call in the middle of the trial, and it doesn't say, like, call me back. He just sort of walks off and answers it. While one
apparently the emperor, in front of the emperor.
And while one of his like, crewmen is on trial for and is probably going to be put to death, and he's like, gotta take it.
But it's really interesting, because this is pre-cell phone etiquette.
Like, oh,
this,
right.
This is, like, out before cell phones were around.
Crazy.
So,
yeah,
like, they didn't
right.
really understand. I mean, like, the writers probably didn't think about the fact that it would be extremely rude to answer.
It's just
a
like
phone.
Talking to another person.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, nowadays, like, that, you see somebody answer a phone, like, in the middle of a trial, you'd be like, are you kidding me?
I'm pretty sure that's illegal.
Yeah, but in that, it's just, like, they don't know.
Although, to be fair, it's not dishonorable because, as we know, nothing is more honorable than victory, and he ends up winning the trial, kind of.
Yeah, so, you know, that's
ends
that's how,
justify
that's
the
how,
means with
that's
cell phones.
That's how honor is judged somehow. It makes zero sense, but... So, Picard, despite the danger, goes out and finds this woman, and she's reluctant to join for whatever plot reasons, but she eventually kind of acquiesces when Picard gets attacked. And she helps him by, like, stabbing one of the assassins in the back. So Picard fights off two guys when Kern couldn't, who's, like, one of the most elite freaking Klingon warriors.
But they get defeated by an sort of, I mean, sprightly middle-aged man and an old woman.
An old woman who apparently looks like one of the old women from Mad Max, according to Raoul.
Yes, she did. I want that on the record.
I mean,
she looked exactly like
they
her.
They are both sort of old brown women with wrinkly skin, so...
Yeah.
I mean,
what else
on
do
a very
want?
Surface level, yes.
And on the other hand, one was a Klingon.
One was a Klingon.
The other was a...
Person. You're looking for the word person.
I'm thinking of a clan. Shit. I should know this.
Oh, you know... Remember that Rick and Morty joke?
Swaddle Dog. Clan Swaddle Dog.
Remember that Rick and Morty joke about how Rick is so, like, disconnected from humans that he briefly forgot the word person? That literally just happened with Raoul.
Not, wait, what's the word? Swaddle Dog.
Klingon Swaddle Dog. Do you not see this?
So, anyways, Picard and the old woman fight off these guys, and then she comes back. And,
but she doesn't actually know anything. They're just hoping to bluff the court.
Right. And so when she gets back, the court is about to rule that Worf is guilty. And so Picard interrupts right before it happens, and it looks like he's going to save the day with this, like, new piece of information that they just, like, barely got the last minute. But the Emperor and Duras adjourn, want to go into a private recess to talk about the evidence that they have. And in this private meeting... which Worf and Picard are outraged about, the Emperor reveals that they already know that it wasn't Moog that did this. It was Duras' father, who's part of a really big clan in the Klingons, and if they, if their family is dishonored, it will cause a civil war. So Moog was basically pinned with this so that the Klingon Empire doesn't dissolve.
And they figured pin it on Moog because he was the only person there who... He had one son who wasn't part of Klingon society, so it wouldn't matter if he got dishonored. And they didn't think everyone else, they had family or friends or something, and it would have mattered if they got this horrible crime pinned on them.
And interestingly enough, they didn't just erase the fact that anyone did it.
Yeah.
They decided to
I guess it
pin
got,
it on
yeah,
Moog.
Yeah, like, why does it need to involve...
Like, who? No one even knew about it until... They brought it up.
Well, why did that guy go bring Worf back?
The Kern?
Kern?
Because he couldn't make the challenge because he wasn't the eldest.
He wasn't the eldest son.
And he, okay, so it's Kern's fault.
It's not much. Kern's fault.
Kern
it's
is a stand-up guy.
It's Kumpex and Duras' fault for pinning it on somebody else.
And also for just being shit Klingons.
Yeah.
With no honor.
With no honor.
Because
Kern was only responding to the fact that his father's name was being slandered in his mind.
And the key line here is that the Emperor says, you know, you might as well not have presented this evidence because we've already reached a verdict, which is like the twist I was talking about on the classic Star Trek episode, because it turns out it was impossible for them to think their way out of it, and they've wasted all their effort, and there's no magic solution.
So then Picard says, there's absolutely no way that you're going to pin this on Worf. And if that causes a rift with the Federation and the Klingon... then
so be it.
That's your guys' fault, not ours.
Which I think is so interesting. I've always struggled with that. Should you always act from a place of principle, or should you break your principles when it results in utter chaos.
I also question why Picard is apparently allowed to unilaterally do things that will start wars with the Klingons. It seems like he should have to ask someone.
In this case, he's allowed to protect his own crew from being executed if he knows for a fact
it'll
that
it'll reflect upon the Federation.
Well, yeah, because it's going to reflect upon the Federation, first of all, and second of all, he knows for a fact that he's innocent. So he's not going to allow his crew member to be executed for something he didn't do. He's also an authority of law.
But would he let Worf be executed if Worf's father had sent the codes?
And also
I think he would have.
Complicating this further, Worf he thinks about it for a sec while Picard's monologuing. Yeah. And then he's like, I will die.
Yeah.
And he offers
die for the Empire.
He offers them a deal where he will let them die. He will let them execute him. He will, publicly be like, my father did this or whatever. And in exchange for that, they'll just let Kern go back to his old life. But the Emperor and Duras both say that that's not a good enough because apparently Kern is kind of an open secret or something.
Yeah, so, he said that Kern would come back for revenge.
Oh, right.
His honor would demand revenge.
Yeah, and he absolutely would have.
Yeah, definitely. Kern would have gone back in there with a couple of phasers and fuck shit up.
Right, so...
not phasers.
They're totally right, but Worf comes to a new deal where instead of being executed, he'll be discommendated. Which basically means he's totally banished from Klingon society. They don't even acknowledge that he exists, which is worse than death in Klingon society. And so since he's discommodated, they won't execute or even do anything to Kern. Because that's like such a strong punishment that no one will question it.
And Picard takes Kern aside briefly when Kern is like, I'm not going to stand for this, and says, you need to keep your honor. You need to sort of stay in Klingon society because we're going to revisit this. We're going to get your guys' family honor back. And in the meantime, if you get your honor stripped from you, it will complicate that. So just go along with this for now, but understand it's not over.
Yeah, and you have to live today. It was a really interesting conclusion of the episode.
And it ends on this amazing sort of shot where... Worf is just standing in the center of a circle of Klingons and they all turn their back, and then at the end Kern is like, no, I don't want to, brother, and Worf's like, do it, and then so they all turn their back and refuse to acknowledge Worf, and then Picard just sort of leads him out of the chamber, and it's like a real bummer note.
So that's the end of the first episode that we watched.
I think that this isn't as good as the second one because I need to watch all of Deep Space Nine. I kind of think the second episode is my favorite episode of Star Trek. But it's a pretty goddamn good episode. You get to see Kronos, the Klingon homeworld, I think maybe for the first time, unless it shows up in Undiscovered Country.
I don't remember if it was the first time or not, but...
It's pretty cool. It looks a lot like the Sith homeworld in Star Wars The Old Republic.
Yeah, it kind of does.
Except less jungly and with more just, somehow even more imposing architecture.
Yeah. So, you want to do the summary of the second episode?
Oh, shit. I barely even remember it. Okay. This is going to be hard. I don't want to do the second episode.
Okay, Ronald, take it. Let's hear some more of your mellifluous tones. Would you like me to get you some hot tea to soothe the vocal cords?
No, okay,
that's a hard one to do, I feel like.
Yeah, there's a lot going on here. So, this is also... preceded by things that we didn't watch.
The setup for this one is that it takes place after Worf has been stripped of his honor again. He got it back for siding the right side of this in the Klingon Civil War and was given it by Gowron. But then Gowron's like, hey, we're invading Cardassia. You want to come with us? And Worf's like, no, that sounds dumb, dude. So Gowron strips him and his entire family of their honor and their lands and all this shit.
Essentially, Worf sided with the Federation instead of siding with the Klingon Empire in this dispute.
Oh, and that's why everybody hates him.
Well, yeah. That's why the Klingon Empire hates him, yes.
I mean, he's been discommendated twice at this point.
I mean, a lot of the themes of Worf is he has to choose sides between... how he was raised and what he was born as. Most of the time he chooses the Federation. Because really, the Federation is all about not just adhering to whatever your base instincts are. And that's totally what the Klingons are basically about.
Has he ever, let's see, I think in the Klingon Civil War arc, he literally leaves the Federation to go fight in the Klingon Civil War. So that's him choosing the Klingons over them.
There's another time, I think, when he, goes and does a duel, and when Picard doesn't want him to.
Oh, right, when he just, his, the mother of his child gets murdered, and he just straight up goes and ganks Duras, I think, for doing it. Someone, it might not be Duras, but he goes in and just straight up kills the Klingon who did it. And...
Right. So, yeah, there's a couple of times when he, like, kind of does what Klingon culture would praise, and the Federation is like, dude, you shouldn't be doing that. You're a Federation officer.
But normally he chooses
he chooses the Federation.
Although he always will find some way of sort of choosing the Federation in Klingon style.
Yeah, absolutely. So in this case, right before the episode, I'll just kind of set it up because this kind of unfolds over the course of the episode.
Oh, also, so if you're a big... I mean, if you're interested at all, I would say just check this out because we're going to kind of spoil it. And it does have – it has a twist you can see coming, and then it has a really satisfying end scene that it's better if you don't, like, see
– Right.
I've described
it. Yeah, I mean, like, if you're interested in the episode, you should definitely watch it before you listen to this. But
I mean, also, if you're – spoilers. Also, if you're interested in the episode, you've definitely watched it because it's been out for, like, 15 years at this point. But
yeah,
still.
I mean, probably. But if the first episode's – summary got you interested in Star Trek, I would definitely go check out this episode too. But anyway, so before the start of this episode, Worf was commandeering a ship that was protecting a convoy of Cardassians through kind of a disputed space. And on this convoy was worried basically about being attacked by Klingons. And in fact, they were attacked by Klingons. And a warbird attacked the convoy, and Worf kind of led the ship to counterattack this warbird, but the warbird has cloaking technology, so it kept cloaking and kind of going off and then coming back in and shooting and then cloaking and going off. And Worf figured out that it had a pattern, and he realized which direction it was going to come in from. And so right as it decloaked, he fired a bunch of quantum torpedoes, and right after he fired, it decloaked, and it turned out that this was a civilian Klingon ship, which was somewhat reasonable considering that there was supposed to be civilian Klingon ships nearby.
It is still, because it was disputed space. They do comment repeatedly that it's really weird that it decided to decloak right in front of a warship, though.
So yeah, there are a lot of really suspicious factors. The fact that it decloaked right in front of an enemy ship in the middle of a battle, the fact that it like went straight to them, it was off course of where it should be. So there were some suspicious factors, but it's also somewhat plausible that it could have been a civilian ship that just like went a little bit off course.
Yeah. Also the reaction shot that we see, I think it might be in Worf's memory, so it's a little subjective because the flashbacks in this aren't 100% what happened, of just everyone looking in stunned horror when they realize what just happened is, it genuinely, like, gets to you a little.
Yeah.
I mean, especially for a silly sci-fi show, which, again, is mostly just people with shit glued to their forehead shouting at each other.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, it's a big moment. Like, Worf realized that he killed,
like,
basically...
Oh, my God.
He killed an entire ship full of civilians because he didn't, you know, because he shot at something he didn't know what it was. So, yeah, that's the setup to this episode. And this episode, he's on trial for whether or not... he should be guilty of negligence or murder or whatever the conviction is, so that the Klingons can take him away.
Yeah, they're going to take him back to the homeworld to undergo trial. The episode does not quite suggest that it's going to be an unfair trial or that him going back is a death sentence, but it does suggest that it's probably not good for him to go back there.
Especially since he was already
be fair, could they even try him since they refuse to acknowledge that he exists?
Well, is he just commandated after the Cardassian War?
I forget exactly what Gowron does to him. I know that it's, like, sort of the same thing, but I guess it might not be quite you are a non-entity.
Yeah, because it seems like they acknowledge him a lot.
It would be very funny for Ron Canada to try to put him on trial while simultaneously doing the "Did you hear that? Did you hear that? It must have been the wind" bit.
So what is the lawyer's name? Because he's so awesome.
He's played by Ron Canada. I forget what his actual name is, but he makes this him, and this episode was directed by LeVar Burton.
Oh.
And amazing. He does a really good job with it. There's a lot of, like, inventive weirdness to stop it from just being a static chord episode.
Yeah, so it's a really interesting episode. I think it's really well shot. There's a lot of flashbacks in it that, like, actually, like, the characters in the flashbacks start interacting with the modern, or with the current time, which is, like, a really interesting way to frame the memories.
And it stops us from having to do either exposition without a flashback or a flashback with voiceover laid over it, both of which are weird.
Yeah. So, okay. So it starts off with this lawyer who's basically trying to prove that Worf is guilty, and Sisko, who's the commander of Deep Space Nine, I guess he's a captain, technically.
No, he's a captain at this point. He starts off as commander, though.
Okay. So, yeah, now he's a captain.
He got promoted because he did a reasonably good job of handling the Dominion, which does not appear in this episode at all.
Yeah, and so Sisko is acting as the lawyer for defending Worf, so he's trying to prove Worf's innocence. And they make it very clear that the Klingon lawyer has to prove Worf's guilt and not the other way around.
And early on, the Klingon lawyer just accepts, out of hand, the statement of fact, so there's not going to be any, sudden revelations of, well, there is a sudden revelation, but it's not going to be him springing surprise witnesses on any of them. And he also makes it very clear that he's going to play by the rules of Starfleet.
Yeah, and he absolutely does. I think he plays by his word. He's not doing any... I don't think he does anything in the episode that's unreasonable or trickery or anything like that.
Aside from maybe when he provokes Worf into striking him, but on the other hand, that's really on Worf for letting himself be provoked.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he said fighting words for sure, but I think that it proved a very effective point that Worf can lose control.
And that Worf has a chip on his shoulder about Klingons.
Right. And there's really no other way to prove that. I mean, I guess you can look at past incidents, but...
Which he also does.
Yeah. So the lawyer starts off by questioning a bunch of different people that Worf know. I don't know how much into detail I...
Yeah, we can sort of gloss over this. The main points are he brings up a holodeck simulation of Worf murder where reenacting a famous Klingon battle that ends in a massacre, which I think is
pretty weak evidence.
Then he brings up Quark, who has... There's this fun little bit of Quark, reciting testimony, but, misremembering it while telling a weird, digressive story. So he'll be like, it was the doctor talking to one of my Dabo girls, and then he turns away. He's like, oh, wait, no, it wasn't the doctor. It was, And then it ends up with Morn talking to a woman, which is... Morn is this horrifying monster that hangs out in Quark's bar. It's a nice little bit of staging because they get to do the trickery of turn the camera away, turn back, and it's someone else. And also it livens up the scene. But the point of that is Worf orders a prune juice and then looks very seriously at Quark and says, I hope they do attack us.
Yeah, yeah. Quark asks him, what are you going to do if the Klingons attack? And Worf says something to the effect of, I hope that they attack us. So that's a lot of the testimony. Then he brings O'Brien up, who's, first officer in the ship that Worf had blow up, the civilian ship. And he asks O'Brien what his opinion on the matter is, and he says he stands with Worf, but then he asks what he would have done in the same situation, which O'Brien says that he doesn't believe that is a fair question because it's after the fact and it's totally unreasonable to use hindsight to analyze the situation. But despite all that, the lawyer insists, and O'Brien says that he would not have done the same thing in the same situation.
And the episode at this point wants us to believe that this is the lawyer being unfair, but when we go back on it later, we'll realize that actually this is a very good point and that Worf did do something unusual when he ordered them to fire.
Yeah.
Also, Ronald, you expressed that you don't like Chief O'Brien.
Well, I haven't seen Deep Space Nine, and that's I kind of hate him in The Next Generation. He's pretty much the worst.
Okay, first off, he's not Pulaski, and he's not all of the Ferengi in Next Generation.
Okay, he's not the worst character, but he's not good. And he basically, anytime he's on in the show, he's just, either complaining about something, fighting with Keiko, or being, xenophobic.
Okay, now here's my counterpoint. I really like Chief Miles O'Brien because, as I've said repeatedly on Twitter, he's a doughy engineer with an improbably attractive wife, and that really reminds me of me and makes me think I could be in Star Trek.
In real life, or?
Well, obviously, if he can meet Starfleet's physical standards, so could I. And we're both engineers with really hot wives, so he's my audience identification character.
Okay, all right.
But he doesn't act anything like you besides that.
I mean, what, you don't think I have his joy for life and weird Irishism?
No. I feel like,
he's sort of ambiguously Irish.
So I've heard that he basically gets a better character in Deep Space Nine. I can't speak to that. He did seem like he had more character in this episode than I'd seen in any of The Next Generation. So I kind of believe it, but from what I'd seen in Next Generation, he's pretty lame. Anyways, that's why I expressed that.
Fair enough. And that's why I will stand by O'Brien.
Yeah. So at this point, it's looking pretty bad for Worf. And then...
there's a parallel plot where Sisko and Odo are investigating.
Right.
And
so Odo's doing his, like, detective work and looking into the passengers of the civilian ship that got blown up to see if they had any reason to attack Worf. Because Sisko's initial thought is that maybe the ship was actually decloaking to attack, despite there really not being any evidence for that.
Aside from his sort of general racist ideas about what Klingons do.
Well, I mean, and also the fact that a civilian ship decloaked right in the front of an attacking warship, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah. We should mention, you haven't seen enough of this to know. You know that guy with the weird smooth face?
Yes.
That's
yes.
Odo. He can change shapes.
Oh.
It didn't come up
really?
At all.
Right.
Yeah.
That's why he's a really good detective.
Yeah.
I didn't realize
that. Well, that and he's got a vague disdain for all, like, organic life, which helps him.
Yeah. He's pretty awesome.
Is
actually.
He a robot?
Yeah. No, he's just a changeling.
Okay.
So, Odo's doing his investigation, and it doesn't seem to be finding anything. So everything during the episode up until kind of the end, it kind of seems that he's not really seeing any evidence that this was anything but a ship full of civilians. So Sisko goes on the stand, and he doesn't really say too much. The lawyer asks him some questions. I actually don't even remember.
Yeah, it's not. It wasn't super memorable. I guess it's just background information on Worf. I'm sure Avery Brooks gets some good line readings in.
Yeah.
And I remember really like seeing him and Ron Canada just act off each other.
Yeah.
But
right. So the dynamic between those two characters is great, but I don't think he reveals any important information. And then Worf goes on the stand, and this is kind of like the big, I think the kind of the showcase of this episode.
Oh.
This and the final scene between him and Sisko. But
before Worf goes on the stand, Ron Canada takes Sisko aside and is like, hey, don't put him on the stand. It's going to hurt your case. Why don't you just concede now? We'll take Worf back to the Empire, and I personally will get him off, and then I will make sure he's found guilty or innocent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a sex joke. It didn't land at all.
So, and he makes it very clear at this point that he actually doesn't really care which side he's on. He just likes arguing, and he's really good at it.
And before, he's also said that really he took Sisko aside and explained that they really what's at stake here is more that the Klingons want to prove that Worf committed a massacre so that they can use that to get territorial concessions.
Right. So,
which raises the stakes, I guess, although it's weird that he just told Sisko.
Yeah, I'll talk about
he's
this a little bit later,
that.
But I think that gives me reason to think that the lawyer did not know that there was anything foul.
Otherwise, why would he admit that?
Right. So it seems to me that he actually didn't know that anything with the facts was going on. Like, I don't think he was trying to hide anything. So Worf gets put on trial. He gets on the stand, and this lawyer is kind of like baiting him. He keeps talking about how he's not honorable. Is he really a Klingon warrior? His blood has been thinned. And he asks him if he would ever attack an unarmed man, woman, or child. And Worf says no. And then he keeps baiting him. He gets him so mad that Worf actually attacks him. And then he says, "I thought you said you'd never attack an unarmed person."
I guess you meant. You'd never attack an unarmed person unless they made you angry.
Right, and he did a pretty good job to establish that Worf is angry at the Klingons, and I think Worf even admitted it. He just said that he can't control himself.
Mm-hmm.
So the lawyer really just proved that that Worf could lose control, and so it's a very distinct possibility that that's what happened. And so it's looking really bad for Worf at this point, but then Sisko actually asked to put the Klingon lawyer on the stand. It's kind of weird, but...
Well, that's called the Clarence Darrow because it's what happens to Clarence Darrow in Inherit the Wind, where they put him on the stand and then just kind of ask him a bunch of questions about the Bible. And in the play Inherit the Wind, it conclusively proves that evolution is real somehow. Although that actually happened in
proven
when that actually happened in real life, it was just kind of this annoying thing that wasted everyone's time.
So yeah, so they put the Klingon Warrior on the stand, and Sisko basically asks them, "Hey, is this the list of people that were on the ship?" And the Warrior looks it over and he says, "Yeah, this is them." And he's like, "Are you sure? There's 440 names on this list."
They are burned into my heart and memory.
It's a really cool line.
They were burnt as martyrs who were murdered by a coward.
Yeah, and Sisko says, you know, we've investigated them. There's only one thing that puts them in common with each other, is that they were all on the same ship together. And, you know, and the lawyer's like, yeah, no, I agree. That's really their only thing in common. He's like, and then they all got on another ship together.
And the lawyer's like, oh, fuck.
Well, the lawyer looks, like, really confused, actually. He's like, what are you talking about? And so Sisko reveals that he figured out that these guys were all on this ship that crashed on some Klingon planet.
Like weeks before, right?
Yeah, weeks before the incident. And they were all presumed dead. And then suddenly they were all on this other civilian ship. All of them on the same ship were recovered from this other ship. And on this ship that was, you know, in the middle of contested space and was blown up by Worf.
I think this sort of proves that the Klingons still have some honor because they are so bad at lying. I'm just like, okay.
They didn't even change the names or anything.
Yeah, they didn't. I mean, if they just put a ship full of corpses or something, but they had to do this, the exact same crew, the exact same roster, all this
shit.
That's
really weird. They were so lazy about it.
Yeah.
Well, they were simultaneously lazy, but also assuming it was like the same ship and they towed it out there and put all the corpses on it, they also put in way more work than they had to. It's this weird combination of putting the work in the wrong place.
I don't think that the bodies were there. I think it was an empty ship, yeah. But, the Warrior concedes, like, yeah, it's possible that there's nobody on the ship.
And there's this really fun scene where Avery Brooks keeps asking him leading questions of, like, isn't it possible?
Yeah.
And the guy keeps having to go yes
or no. It's really well acted. It's a really well acted scene. I really love that scene. And then, so the guy concedes, yeah, it's very possible that Worf didn't kill anyone. And then it kind of cuts to Worf in his room, kind of looking somber. And Sisko comes in and says, hey, we're going to go to this celebration.
And Sisko seeming very, very cheerful.
Right. Sisko seeming very cheerful. And Worf says, you know, like, I don't want to go to a party right now. Like, I feel like I really screwed up.
I should never have taken that mission. Yeah. And then suddenly Avery Brooks does the best acting.
Sisko closes the door.
Closes the door.
And he just, like, totally changes demeanor.
He's like, you're right.
He's like, that was your first mistake. What was your second?
Yeah, and Worf says, I should have never fired on an unidentified ship. And that's when he has, like, a really awesome line. You probably remember it.
Well, he's like, you're damn right you shouldn't have. You acted as a soldier. We're not soldiers in Starfleet. We never, ever put civilians in danger. And we damn sure don't fire on ships until we know what they are.
Yeah.
Sometimes that means we lose, and sometimes that puts us at risk, and sometimes that even kills us, but we never do that.
Right, so he's basically saying he would rather risk, you know, I mean, when you're in Starfleet, you have to risk your own life over, like, innocent civilians, which is kind of a fair point, and I think that's what O'Brien was kind of hinting at, why he wouldn't have fired. So it kind of seems like the Klingon lawyer is actually playing pretty fair by the rules and asking, like, hey, what the hell? You fired at a ship that was basically immediately decloaking.
Yeah, aside from the bullshit about the holosuite, basically everything the Klingon lawyer says is 100% correct.
Yeah. I mean, the holosuite thing is, like, this was back in the 90s when people thought, you know, video games did make you violent.
To be fair, the holosuite, if any video game were going to make you violent, it would be the holosuite, because if you kill someone in the holosuite, it is identical to murdering someone.
The lawyer did hack into his account, too.
Yeah, well, he didn't really hack into it. He just brought evidence that he didn't present. And so it's like, okay, in a real law, in a real trial, you cannot bring evidence that you didn't tell the opponent about.
But he got into his personal file.
It's unclear how he did that. We don't know if it was hacking or not. And then he baits Worf. And then he baits Worf into letting it in by being like, can I present this? Or do you have something to hide? Which is the classic authoritarian asshole line.
I mean, it's kind of a dick thing to do, but, like, honestly, he did that just to bait with Worf. Like, he didn't really need that evidence. And he could have easily asked Worf beforehand, and Worf would have allowed it. The reason he did that was just to make Worf feel like he had nothing to hide, so that he would be more vulnerable when he goes up on trial. Mm. Because it's a really good question of, like, are you trying to hide something? Is this... Because he's trying to say, like, hey, look, I'm being really open here by just doing everything. I'm accepting all the facts as they are. But are you trying to trick this court, or are you playing by the rules too? Are you, like, letting everything out and just, like, letting the facts lay as they are? Because really, like, that simulation thing doesn't really matter that much.
I guess it establishes a little bit Worf's, like, state of mind, but
yeah,
it doesn't matter.
Right, but if Worf had been like, no, I don't want this evidence to be out, it gives himself a kind of shadow of a doubt of whether or not he really believes that he's guilty or he's innocent. So anyways, yeah, that's kind of the conclusion of the episode, is Sisko kind of chewing out Worf and then saying, you know, the fact that you're upset about this is the reason that you make a good officer.
And this is my favorite of all the invert or twists on, like, the Star Trek plot I've ever seen, because it turns out that, like, the people they were going up against who were supposed to, you know, the bad guys or whatever, were absolutely right in basically everything that he said about Worf. You know, Worf shouldn't have fired it. And
he was right. He shouldn't have fired. I mean, it was a really suspicious scenario. So, like, that's why Sisko was like, I don't think that these guys were actually civilians. But I think even Sisko knew that Worf did the wrong thing when he fired on, like,
and he's cloaking shit. He's defending him because he knows there's going to be a political incident. Right. But you kind of get the sense that sending Worf to, like, face justice wouldn't have caused some political incident, he might have actually done it.
Yeah.
Or at least he would have thought about it really hard.
Well, I think that, you know, he wanted to make sure that this wasn't just a setup, which it was.
But it was a weird kind of setup that still let Worf be absolutely at fault.
Right. So, yeah.
So why does Starfleet, like, why are they, like, these weird, like, humanitarian people, even though they have these ships that are, like, super armed?
Basically because Gene Roddenberry was a utopian socialist in the 1960s, but he also needed to make an adventure show. Mm. But it ends up being more sort of like the ships are primarily science vessels, but they have to do some peacekeeping stuff, and the Federation's technology is so advanced that they kind of can't make a ship that could slag an entire planet. The Enterprise has the power to, like, destroy a planet. It's more powerful. Yeah, like, it could render it uninhabitable.
Because they lost their shields in, like, the first instant of that battle.
Well, that was because they got ambushed.
Also have very powerful weapons.
Oh, okay. So it's very possible that the Enterprise would have been destroyed if...
That wasn't the Enterprise.
But it was the Defiant, but it's still very possible that in the fight there was a real chance they could lose. And
yeah, the Defiant could have gotten destroyed. If the Enterprise had been there, I mean, wouldn't have been probably... that hurt by the warbird.
Well, actually, the Defiant's supposed to be more powerful than the Enterprise, weirdly.
At that point in time?
Yeah, the Defiant is specifically, like, the closest the Starfleet has ever come to making a, like, actual warship. That's why Deep Space Nine only has one ship attached to it, but, you know, it's supposed to be powerful enough that maybe it can fight the Dominion. I think we all know where we stand in these episodes. I really like him. Ronald's pretty up on him, and Raoul... sees the merit.
On the fence. Yeah. I like it. And parts of me are like, this is boring. And the other part of me is like, yeah, this is good.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's not a terribly, like, exciting... I mean, if you're really into, like, intrigue, I think it's exciting. But it's not a terribly, like... Especially without context. Because there's, like, a lot of context that's missed by not seeing the rest of the show.
And it's also, even though there are some space fights in, especially the second one... Cool. It's not like that action pack.
You see what's on their screen, and it's just like these little models, pretty much.
And the first one, aside from some poorly choreographed knife fights, there's nothing.
it's Star Trek, you know. Like, I don't know if you've seen it, you kind of know. If you haven't seen it, it seems like it's going to be like a space adventure show, but there's really not that much fighting there. Surprisingly low amount of fighting.
Yeah, that started, I think, is mostly a budgetary consideration. I think, aside from, there are very few episodes of the original series that have protracted space combat, but then it became kind of a tradition. So, anyways, there is one order of business I'd like to get out of the way before we go to the recommendations and cautions.
Okay.
Ronald, would you care to rate the Star Trek captains?
Oh. Okay.
And for this, let's just stick to the TV series and accept that neither of us has seen or Discovery or Enterprise, so we can't really rank them.
Yeah, I haven't seen either of those, so I can't. Okay, so I would definitely say Jean-Luc Picard, Sisko, Janeway, Kirk.
Yeah,
Kirk's
so,
my least favorite.
Yeah, I put Sisko, then it's kind of a tie between Janeway and Picard, and then I put Kirk dead last because in the original series, Kirk is kind of terrible at things. Like, he can't actually be terrible because the series written, like, he's the protagonist, he has to be good at things, but he seems like an arrogant asshole who's constantly, like, causing problems he doesn't need and solving things in stupid ways. And also, he treats the Prime Directive as, like, this weird sort of suggestion, which I don't cotton to.
So he's like a Romulan.
No,
not at all.
Well, he's more like just this weird sort of incredibly arrogant horn dog.
Yeah, he's like an egomaniac. Honestly, I don't really like the original series that much.
It has a number of standout episodes. I really like Balance of Terror in particular.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are some really good episodes, but in general, I don't really have that much fun watching it like I do Next Generation.
And also, I think that they went to the godlike entity well way too often on the original series. Yeah. There are Q episodes in the new... in
Next Generation.
But they're not as often, and Q also has more personality, generally.
Definitely. And Q also generally has, like, a lot of drawbacks associated with his interference, whereas, like, a lot of times in the original series, it's just, like, Deus Ex Machina, you know, to get him out of a situation.
Which... Yeah. Oh, have you seen the episode where Q comes to Deep Space Nine?
I don't think so.
You should check it out. It's very funny.
Okay.
Because Q comes and Sisko is just like, nope, I know who you are and I'm not putting up with your shit. And at one point he punches him.
That sounds awesome.
Then Q looks up at him and goes, Picard never struck me. And Sisko looks down at him glowering and goes, I'm not Picard.
Yeah, Sisko really hates Picard because Picard gets joined in the Borg at one point and basically
murders Sisko.
As Locutus, like, destroys a ton of Federation starships.
And kills Sisko's wife.
And kills Sisko's wife. Oh,
so there's this scene where they're like, Picard is handing over command of Deep Space Nine to Sisko, and Sisko just is glaring at him, and it's the first time you've ever seen someone in Starfleet actually be like, hey, remember when Picard was briefly like almost genocided the human race? Yeah, that's fucked up.
Pretty much everyone kind of ignores that. But
they're like, he was under mind control, it's fine.
Which he kind of was.
But... I mean, he was, but still, that's... Not the sort of thing you... It's on an emotional level. It's hard to look past a guy trying to exterminate the human race.
Why was he so good at it?
Because the Borg are good at it and because they had Jean-Luc Picard's tactical mind.
Okay.
So, anyways, let's go ahead and go to recommendations and cautions. Raul, would you like to start?
Recommendations?
And it can be just about anything you want. So just something you like, something you don't.
Let's see. What have I liked lately on Netflix? Did I already recommend A Series of Unfortunate Events?
No, you have not.
Oh my god, it is so good. Cannot recommend it enough. It's like, you know when you watch like the first opening sequence, like the little Netflix logo thingy on Netflix?
Mm-hmm.
And then like, you've seen a show so many times that like, you expect a certain music?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's what A Series of Unfortunate Events is to me now. It's like, it's definitive of Netflix. The best of Netflix is A Series of Unfortunate Events, in my mind. It's like, funny and weird and like everything I like in a show.
Okay, yes. Cool.
Well, got something you want to caution people against?
Something I'd caution people against. Not that I can think of right now.
Fair enough. Ronald?
Alright, let's see. I've been watching a lot of movies recently. One movie I really liked that I watched recently was Hostiles, starring Christian Bale. It's like a Western where Christian Bale's kind of this racist military captain, and he's escorting a Native American chief that he had, like, captured 7 years prior, and now is being let go because he's dying of cancer, so he can, like, roam his home fields in Montana. And they kind of go on this really dark adventure trying to get there, and basically everyone is just out to get them. Everyone that they come across is hostile, which is kind of, I guess, what the name of the movie is from. But just really good, really dark. It's not exactly something that you want to... It's not like a pump-up movie or something to make you feel good. But I really enjoyed it. Caution, you know, I'd never seen the Boondock Saints, and I started watching it.
That sucks.
I started watching it, and I was like, this is awful.
I don't know why people love that movie so much.
Because people watch it when they're in high school, and all that pseudo-mystic or pseudo-profound bullshit about that we have to do this, but we damn ourselves really appeals to idiots and high schoolers.
And it has a cool name. I will give it that.
Oh, it is a good name.
It's a sick name, but the movie sucks.
I only watched the first 20 minutes, and I was like,
I watched the whole thing. And I was waiting for the good part the whole goddamn time. Now, it never happened.
Here's a weird thing. There's a documentary about the making of the Boondock Saints called Overnight that is amazing.
Really?
Yeah, it's all about the guy making the Boondock Saints, like, totally letting success go to his head and, like, burning every bridge he has and pissing off Harvey Weinstein, who, in addition to being in a Hollywood, like, one of history's great monsters, is also, like, one of the men in Hollywood you absolutely do not want to piss off because he's very vengeful and also a monster and has, like, all the power in Hollywood. So he just sort of destroys this man's career after making him.
Goes around, comes around.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that movie sucks, so caution against that.
Well, I just thought of a movie I'd like to caution before you.
Okay, go for it.
Crazy Rich Asians. I thought it was garbage.
Oh, God, I hated that fucking movie. Fucking
bad. I don't know why I got talked into watching it. I thought it would be something it wasn't. I thought it was going to be a documentary about Crazy Rich Asians.
Did you really think that?
I really thought that. I didn't watch the trailer. I was like, Crazy Rich Asians. I want to see that. It was like a rom-com. It was a bad rom-com.
I watched it I sat through about the first 40 minutes of that, and then I'm like, okay, there's no conflict, and I hate all these characters because they've got too fucking much money and appear to employ, I mean, not quite slaves, but they have some weird thing where they're like, those Sikh guards they have where they're employing, like, members of another religion or religion specifically for their, like, exoticness is really weird
to me. I haven't seen the movie, so.
Yeah. So so I walked out, but your story reminds me of, like, my absolute favorite story I have about my grandpa.
The one where he got eaten by the cow?
No, that was something I made up to lie to people. Yeah.
Fucking lie to me?
How did he get eaten by a cow?
He fell into a wood chipper.
Cows don't eat meat.
They do what?
Yes, they do.
They do if it falls through a wood chipper.
You can definitely feed a cow meat.
So, well, that is what.
Cow meat, but they don't naturally, like, into it.
You've never been hunted by cow, man.
But so anyways, when I was 4, my grandpa took me to see Jurassic Park, and then just the first one, because I was 4.
It was 4. It was 1993.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. You do numbers now.
Jurassic Park 3 came out in like 2000.
I can't do time or numbers.
I actually went to one of my first dates with on Jurassic Park 3. But anyways, so and years later, we were talking, and he doesn't go to very many movies, and he was explaining to me movies he hadn't liked. He didn't like Saving Private Ryan because he thought it was totally unrealistic that they would send that many soldiers to rescue one guy, and he also told me that he was very disappointed in Jurassic Park because he had gone in expecting a sober discussion of the evolution of dinosaurs.
it's like, I thought Saving Private Ryan was so good, and then,
but it says so much about my grandfather's mindset that he thought, one, that they would spend $94 million making a sober discussion of the evolution of dinosaurs, and two, probably, that would become a massive hit.
If he really thought that, he probably didn't look into the budget of the film.
To be fair, but maybe I still just, and also then he got, like, fairly unrealistic dinosaurs just devouring Samuel L. Jackson. So
your recommendations and cautions?
So my recommendation is there's this language called Scala. I started learning it for work. It is really cool. It gives you, like, the performance of Java, but it tricks you into thinking it's interpreted, although it's really not. So you get the benefits of an interpreted language. You can use any Java library that exists with it. They're totally interoperable with one another. Mm-hmm. And
it's typed.
It's typed, but not in a way that bugs you too much.
I like typing.
Yeah, it's a lot better than Python, where it's like, it's typed, but it doesn't tell you the types.
Right.
So you're like, oh, shit, that thing wasn't a string I thought was a string. Oh, and now I've got to go do some casting.
Can you have a recommendation for something that is more consumer culture?
That not nerds might like? I mean, on our first episode, I cautioned against the Python thread library.
Okay.
But anyways, okay, so if I've got to give a recommendation... Okay, this is a bit of a qualified recommendation, but I saw this movie called The Evil Inside. I believe it might be The Evil Within. It's on Netflix, Amazon Instant, and you'll know it because it's got a picture of a shirtless Michael Berryman on the cover. It doesn't work as a movie at all because the guy who made it was apparently a serious drug addict who was making it primarily with his own money. So, like, the dialogue doesn't make sense and the plot isn't very clear. But there are some of the most nightmarish images I have ever seen in my entire life.
Really?
And, yeah. And there's this sequence with spiders that I straight up couldn't watch.
So if I got you a tarantula for
I wouldn't
Christmas.
Like it. Don't do that. I'd probably try
but
to get
I want
it back
you to get
you.
Over it.
I don't want to. Why do I need to get over it?
I want you to get over it so you can watch the movie.
Well, whatever. And also the main character, he's playing this weird role where he's playing both a developmentally delayed man and a demon possessing the developmentally delayed man. So he's kind of turning on and off that stereotypical, you know, slow voice. But it's the weird thing is he does a good job with it. I mean, I can't tell if it's just that the movie's so crazy you can't tell, but I didn't think his performance was that offensive.
Interesting.
And then for cautions, shit, what have I been doing recently that I don't like, that I haven't liked?
Any porn you haven't liked recently?
Oh, yeah, tons, but let's see.
I have some other thoughts while you think.
Oh, hit me.
All right. So another movie I'd recommend, or at least all the good fight scenes in it, is Blood and Bone.
I love that movie.
It's really cool to see this massively jacked dude just beat the shit out of everything.
It's Michael J. White.
Oh, my God. I want to see that.
It's so buff. Michael J. White is probably one of the best American martial artists in cinema.
Oh,
the movie
is
not good, but the fight scenes are awesome.
I actually have
all that matters.
I have my caution now.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys know the film Black Dynamite, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you know that there was a television series based off it?
Nope.
Okay, there's a television series based off Black Dynamite. It's animated in the style of the Boondocks.
Okay.
And, okay. I mean, it's not bad exactly, but it's really puzzling. And I mean, actually, maybe watch it because it's such a weird train wreck. They
Use
do this
the caution.
Okay, fine. You know what? You know what?
You know what? That's my favorite show.
You know what? Fuck you and go to hell. Dilbert the series.
Dilbert?
Okay, don't watch it. It sucks.
Yes, it
there's
does.
This whole thing scene in the there's this whole thing in the second episode where it turns out Dogbert's an alien and Dilbert gets impregnated by a different kind of alien.
I do appreciate how creative they try to be.
There's a whole episode on it that ponders the afterlife.
I feel like every time I watch the Dilbert show, I'm like, this is so much weirder than I would have expected this show to be.
Seriously.
It's not about office humor at all.
Was Scott Adams involved with that at all?
Oh, yeah.
I think so.
It must have been so high.
Okay, so are you guys accepting that as my caution, or do I have to do another one?
Do another one. We already knew that one.
Yeah, I recommend it.
Yeah, you can't be in conflict.
Okay, fine. The Spider-Man game.
Okay.
The traversal is really fun, and the combat is really fun, but it's way too long, and its politics are dog shit, and Spider-Man literally teams up with a cop who has abused suspects and just beats up men at her behest. So it's essentially the story of a cop who decides to, like, due process, and this is an NYPD cop too, so it's like due process is a suggestion for her anyways. But
there's a lot of shit in that, like, where she's like, oh, we can't get evidence, can you just go in and fuck everyone up and get evidence for us? It's like, what?
Yeah,
that's not allowed. That's not legal.
Yeah, and also Spider-Man apparently responds to every report of a break-in in that game, which, I mean, if this were real life, would mean he'd spend 90% of his time accosting black people trying to get into their homes. Because America is a garbage country. Because
that's what most of the reports
America is the greatest country that's ever existed.
That may be true.
The fact that you even said that.
If that's true, I'm really sad for all of society.
I would have thought Sweden or Finland, maybe?
I don't know.
They probably conform with our views.
We have so many more nukes, dude. Do you even realize how many nukes we have?
A lot.
Do you realize how sick that is?
So, well, we're the greatest country in the history of the world by very... Now, Raul, I want
to
put...
There's only one function that you need to maximize.
I saw this thing that was like, America's the greatest country in history, and they like listed all these reasons, and one of them was ended slavery.
Oh my God!
And like, somebody responded like, also they won the Civil War.
Oh my God! Okay, I don't think we're going to be able to top that. So, good night and good luck, y'all. If you'd like to recommend an episode of Old Time Radio for us to listen to,
send us a question for the mailbag or a pedantic correction, you can reach us at radiobadtime@gmail.com. Our theme music is Finger in the Bottle by We Ashore Dedicated off their album No Ski Here Okie Sap. Thanks so much for listening.
Life's gonna